from Cape Town, this is the voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM. The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ihsan Higgins here once again. After the leadership hour, we're now just starting with the legal hour. And for those listeners that are just joining us tonight now, assalamu alaikum. And I hope that you guys will be enjoying the legal hour. I've got my two guests on the line already. Good evening, Randall.
Good evening, Ihsan. Always happy to be on air with you.
Ik zal ook happy zijn als ik een kopje Atlantic zie bijvoorbeeld. So, anyways, thanks for joining us once again, Randall. How's the weather there at the Atlantic Seaboard?
Of course, as always, it sounds beautiful.
Okay, I'm sure it's musty.
Yes.
Okay, if you listen to the program just before this, you know, I am advocating for the homeless and poor people to have houses on the Atlantic Seaboard. So, yeah, so watch out and watch that space.
As long as they pay the rates and taxes, it's fine.
Okay, and then we've got Nazir on the Assalamu alaikum, Nazir.
Wa alaikum salam, Ihsan, and to the listeners of the Voice of the Cape. Good evening, Randall. I'm envious. I wasn't aware you were on the seaboard.
Nazir, he's envious because you in Craven B. Don't worry. The one thing, Nazir, well, the one thing you have that he doesn't have is that you have community. And yeah, he doesn't have the Dikenians and neighbors. So anyway, gentlemen, yeah, thank you very much for agreeing to come on. We've got, we're going to, in fact, you know, I was making a vow to myself the other day that I'm not going to be dealing with COVID-related issues anymore. But now we see this spike in COVID-related, deaths it seems like COVID has now reared its head once again. You know, we thought, you know, the worst was over and suddenly it's not. And people have been trying to get on with their normal lives. People have been going to the beach. People have been going to visit, even though they can't go visit. But that is unfortunately, you know, how the, but now suddenly we see all this new cases of COVID, people being diagnosed for COVID, people going into isolation, people dying, you know, and we've got, and I mean, it's getting worse. So we need to obviously now also as activists and as lawyers be vigilant in giving people the right information, because a lot of people in their heads, you know, COVID is over, you know, we're now in lockdown level 3, which has been relaxed. So people are relaxing. But I say, you know, people can't relax. And the reason for that is because the more we don't relax, the more cases we will have. Yeah. So are you guys in agreement with that?
Yeah, I think if I can pick that up, there's always forecast in terms of the computer modeling that the spike in transmissions and infections will occur around about this period, July, August. It was initially as far as out as September. So the current cases that you mentioned were to be expected, and more so particularly with the relaxation of the alert level from level 5 to level 4, and recently at the beginning of this month to level 3. Mm-hmm. So the situation that you sketched was foreseen, and it's an unfortunate outcome of the relaxation of the rule of the regulations, rather. The relaxation of the regulations was, as you say, some listeners might think that the virus has gone. The virus is here as much as it was at level 5. Unfortunately, because of economic reasons, there's a relaxation of the hard lockdown to allow the economic activity of the country to get going again.
Mm. Okay, and Nazir, your comment on that?
Yeah, sure. I think Randall's spot on there. You know, I mean, if you look at the stats at the moment, I see Gauteng is slowly but surely creeping up to meeting up for the Western Cape numbers. And if the stats have anything to go by, I believe they're going to surpass us at some point in time. So the relaxation of the regulations pertaining to the economics of the country is one thing, but I think people need to become a little bit more cognizant and aware and alert of the fact that we're going to be in this for at least the next, I would say, 18 months, and we're in the spike already. Not the winter.
They sound by a lunk. They sound gevaarlijk by a lunk.
Yeah, no, if the experts are anything to believe, then I believe we're going to have it up until 2022 with a couple of waves coming in and out.
I just want to share a stupid moment quickly with yourself and the listener. If stupid was a person right now, it would have been me. I got here this evening and I opened my laptop. And obviously I've got a keyboard on my laptop, and as the messages came in of the radio of the station, I tried to answer some people, but I'm typing on my laptop, not thinking that I should be typing on the keyboard of the computer. And I only realized it about a minute ago, and I thought, yo, I was no stupid, but okay. I guess we have a right to be stupid sometimes. So to those people that I didn't respond to, I'm sorry, it was because I was being stupid. So
I think Ishan, you need us back in studio with you when you
I will respond to those people that ask questions, specific questions, and it's just that when I tried to type on my own computer, I just thought didn't work. But in any case, it's working fine, and so hats off to our technicians for keeping our studio going properly. Anyway, coming back to the program at hand, Randall, there's been some major developments pertaining to smoking and the tobacco wars. And there was cases lost and the cases that's been postponed. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I think one can forgive the tobacco industry for feeling slightly battered and bruised, or I suppose battered and bruised. After the interaction with government, we know, of course, by now that there was a application by the Fair Trade Tobacco Association, FETA, as they call themselves, which was heard before the Pretoria High Court, where FETA sought to declare a tobacco product as an essential product. And the central basis for their argument was that there was, in fact, no rational basis for banning tobacco products. The Chief Judge President in Mshlambo in Pretoria didn't see it their way, and the case was dismissed, or the application was dismissed. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, has a knock-on effect on the case before the Western Cape High Court, brought by British American Tobacco of South Africa. That's it. And that's brought their case, where they launched a constitutional challenge to the regulations banning tobacco products. And they agreed, or the matter was urgent, was brought on an urgent basis, and government also saw the matter as urgent. The matter was due to be heard on the 30th of June, in fact, last week. The government complained that there was new evidence introduced, they needed more time to consider it, and while there's uncertainty around what in fact happened, the matter was ultimately postponed for hearing on the court's role on the 5th and the 6th of August.
Okay, that's a bit long, 5th to 6th of August.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, particularly for an urgent matter.
Yeah, but so I want to examine that a little bit. Nazir, maybe you can come in, because you're used to dealing with urgent applications. I mean, if a matter is urgent, I mean, on what possible basis does a judge actually allocate it to a month away from where we are now, more than a month?
I think, Ishan, what had played out in this particular scenario, and Randall, you can assist me if I'm maybe going off fire here, but as I recall, the papers were exchanged from the part of the respondents, which is now the ministers and the rest of the government officials. And then there was a plea that came in from the state attorney's office, whereby they asked that the matter be postponed because there was no feasible, possible way that the matter could be argued with the exchange of late papers as it was. And they actually made an application to the judge president of this division to try and postpone the matter and get a directive for the matter to be heard further. And he then, on that particular request, as I understand it, postponed it to August. Mm-hmm. And sorry, just to interrupt, the central issue there was that government complained that VATSA introduced new evidence. They had new expert evidence, the new matters, which was raised in reply, which they didn't have a chance to deal with. And therefore, the matter wasn't right for hearing on the 30th, the anticipated date for the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, the matter wasn't right for hearing on the 30th, and the judge president allocated 5 and 6 August.
Randall, just help me understand, which of the parties, I mean, you say the matter wasn't right for hearing, that presupposes that one of the parties, they were not ready to argue.
The government. So government says, look, you'll know that the papers are exchanged. And in reply, Baxter's reply to the government's opposition introduced new evidence, introduced new expert evidence, medical expert reports,
mm-hmm.
which government says they didn't have a chance to consider, and certainly didn't have a chance to consider in that short time period in which to prepare. And they wanted to bring their own, I presume, their own experts to counter Baxter's
experts. So am I to understand that this matter is going to come down to oral evidence as opposed to just arguing the matter on the papers?
Well, that's difficult to say. I don't think it's in neither part's interest to call for oral evidence, particularly if they want the matter to be determined on an urgent basis.
Mm-hmm.
Calling in experts from Europe or wherever, from across the sea, might be difficult under the current circumstances.
Oh, it's foreign experts.
Foreign experts.
Mm.
So I think it's if they want to matter ventilated sooner rather than later, they have to deal with it on the papers.
I think
the difficulty, of course, is that the ban on tobacco products has been enforced for the last 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, by postponing the matter to the first week in August, the ban will be in effect for at least 4 months. So the tobacco industry is crying about the fact that essentially the fiscus is losing billions of rands. They're losing billions of rands in the process, and it serves no one's purpose having the ban in force.
Yeah, look, if you look at now, okay, so now there's been a decision by that other group.
Peter.
Yeah, so now, I mean, just speak to us. In fact, we're going to go for a quick ad break now, but when we come back, I want you to maybe comment, both of you, on the precedent value of that case that was lost up in Pretoria. And, of course, how it could potentially affect this case down in the Cape. So after the break, we'll deal with that.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins.
And we're back with the Legal Hour. I've got Nazir Park, attorney, and I've got Randall Titus, attorney, both on the line. Nazir, I was asking the question just before we went for a break.
Yeah, Sean, you asked the question of whether or not this decision in the Gauteng division would set the precedent for the case coming up in August.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Sean, I think, you know, when one looks at decisions as made in the High Court, ultimately it's a development of law.
Mm-hmm.
And where certain questions are posed and certain answers are given in the court, the other courts have a duty to take note of it. And if you look at the judgment of the FITA case, mm-hmm. it's a reportable judgment, and it's actually marked as well as having interest on other judges, which I imagine whoever's going to be dealing with a matter in Cape Town would also then have to consider. So it is a precedent that is being formed, but it's not necessarily saying that that thinking of that particular judge must be applied in this matter, because the facts might differ somewhat.
Mm. And your comment on it, Randall?
It's quite correct. You see, the central issue of the FITA case is that the court there found that there's a rational basis for the banning of the tobacco products. The ban was procedurally rational.
Mm-hmm.
And that immediately makes the constitutional challenge, Baxter's constitutional challenge in the Western Cape High Court, very difficult to sustain. So I understand that the FITA organization, they're considering their options, whether to, what they're going to do. It seems that they might note an appeal against the judgment in Pretoria. And of course, once that happens, the judgment is suspended pending the appeal.
And that might just give the batter, the Tigers, an opportunity in the Western Cape.
I think this is the first time that lawyers are so baffled about the law, because we don't actually quite understand what comes next. You know, we might be anticipating now a case in the Cape High Court, and the next thing is the things get unbanned, and then of course then there's no more case. And we saw it in a few of the other cases. On the one hand, a case gets lost, and the next day the change gets made. I mean, if you look at the there was the Hedrisa case.
Yeah. No, Sean, I agree with you. If you look at it, I mean, we don't know when we're going to go down to alert level 2. And perhaps when it comes to alert level 2, the government and the National Council, Coronavirus Council, might decide that, you know, now we can actually start implementing the tobacco again. So you're quite right, spot on. It changes all the time, and one never knows when the case will actually lose its momentum.
Yeah, and then of course, I mean, Randall, you are connected to, you sit on the board of Red Cross, is that correct?
On the Children's Hospital Trust.
Yes, on the Children's Hospital Trust, okay, and I take it that is Red Cross.
Yes, the trust is the official fundraiser for the hospital.
Okay, now, what concerns me is, I mean, we spoke last week about alcohol, and of course, how alcohol actually exacerbates, you know, the situation, especially at the hospitals, where trauma admissions in South African hospitals have surged since the ban was lifted. I mean, there's stats pertaining to that. I mean, we've got like something like 25,000 liquor stores and 65,000 bars and restaurants that sell alcohol. I mean, that makes for a lot of places where alcohol is available. Now, has this had, is it true then what we read, that there has been a greater need now for trauma beds to deal with alcohol-related incidents as opposed to, you know, people that's contracted COVID-19?
I'd rather not categorize it, the increase in trauma cases to alcohol itself. Mm. What I can say is this, during the hard lockdown under level 5, since level 5, the increase in cases before at the hospital, trauma cases, mm-hmm. and the like, have increased.
So it has increased?
Has increased since level 5, and again since reduction to level 4, and then since then to level 3. So, and that could be, the increase could be for a number of reasons. One could be that there's increased activity, increased movement of people. Previously, we were confined to our respective homes, and now less so. It could be any number of a bouquet of reasons why there's an increase in trauma cases.
So you say I'm being a bit harsh by saying it's a direct result of alcohol now being available.
I'm sure alcohol plays a part, no doubt. But it's one of a number of other factors. I would suspect.
Nazir, that is Randall's opinion. He sounds like a lawyer. He's being diplomatic, which I don't. If I was a judge, I would actually kick him out of the court because he's not answering the question. He's skirting around the issue. What is your view on it?
It sounds difficult to say. I think I'm probably going to sound like a lawyer now myself, but it's difficult to pin the increase in the infections and the increase for demand of facilities based on the lifting of the alcohol ban. Maybe it's a contributing factor in that, you know, people become a little bit more negligent when they are intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And that could lead to, you know, the lack of adherence to the regulations. But you know, as from a technical point of view, I don't suppose I can pinpoint it to that and focus it on the alcohol. Mm. But you know what? From a realistic perspective, possibly there is it could be a contributing factor. I don't think we can discard it as such.
Mm. Well, it's fine. I think people may need to be aware of this thing. I mean, it's there. I mean, cigarettes are still banned. Alcohol has been unbanned. And of course, you know, we need to save lives. And I think, and I'm hoping that the authorities or people that are on the command council or the cabinet are taking due note of these things. But let's look at some of the lockdown changes that has been announced. One is, I believe now that people can go to restaurants, sit-down restaurants. People don't have to stand and eat anymore.
Yes, no, and while we're on the alcohol issue, what they can do, while they can go to the restaurant, they can't have alcohol with their meal.
Yeah.
And as you might have heard now, many of the restaurants, and this is anecdotally, are saying they're not going to open because it will be cost effective for them to do so without being allowed to serve alcohol.
But all that, I understand, I mean, a few weeks ago already, a week or two ago, they were already allowed to sell alcohol like in off sales. Like, you know, you can buy your alcohol and leave. So, you can eat, but you can leave with your alcohol.
No on site consumption of alcohol.
But you can buy it. And you can go drink in the car.
No, but restaurants aren't off sales, so I doubt whether they allow you to bring your own alcohol to a restaurant.
I'm saying previously you had a situation where restaurants were allowed to sell alcohol, but people couldn't drink it on site.
Yes, but remember, Ishan, I think the allowance was you had to sell them at the same price as the off sale prices. And that takes away a large percentage of the market.
Oh, I see. Okay, so of course there's no profitability in that thing.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's a central issue that's where the restaurant industry is concerned. So I think that issue remains for them. And you're talking about the realization of levels of this enhanced regulations. Of course, cinemas are now reopened. You're going to have 50 people or less allowed. In cinemas, theatres are reopened, personal care services, auctions, casinos.
Even casinos?
Yeah, up to 50% capacity, of course. Okay. And all these industries or sectors that have reopened are again subject, of course, to health and hygiene protocols and guidelines which pertain to that particular sector.
So now, with regard, and Nazir, just quickly, because I know you got kids, are they allowed to go to school? What's the situation now? What's the current situation?
The current situation, Ishan, is that from the 6th of July, if I've got the dates correct, then certain various grades will go back. I think it's the younger grades and up to, I think, grade 6 is also included, if I'm not mistaken. But there's a certain amount of grades that will go back. On the 6th of July, and then on the 3rd of August, I believe, it's back to full swing with everybody that's kept their children in school will return to school. I know certain schools are trying to make provisions for certain, like, virtual learning and things like that to try and keep the kids at home. But whether that's going to be implemented across the board, I don't know. From a regulatory perspective, on the 3rd of August, all children should be back at school already.
3rd of August. Okay, so listen,
it's a phase in process. Yeah, as everybody knows, the matrix and the grade sevens are back already.
But now this flies in the face of the current thinking. I mean, here they're saying this thing is going to be for another 18 months. And here we're saying 3rd of August, which is like a few weeks from now. I mean, isn't there a bit of a contradiction in this whole thing?
Look, I think they try to... Sorry, Randall. I think they try they're trying their best to try and save the academic year. And that's the thinking behind it. But if one looks at the statistics as we stand, the children are picking up infections, the teachers and are picking up infections. So it's there. I just think the schools are trying their level best to try and contain it.
Yeah, okay, Randall, and your take on it?
Yeah, if I remember, the horse was never going to be kept in the stable. It was always going to be let out. The whole purpose of the lockdown regulations was simply to buy government time to get our healthcare system prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So this staggered approach, or they call this risk staggered approach,
is designed to give a structured reintegration of people back into the economy. So it's about patients concerned and business concerned. There's a structure in place, and it's not because that the virus is gone. It's simply structured to allow the healthcare service to survive. We know, of course, from the Minister of Health that we've got, particularly in the Western Cape, that we are prepared. We've got, I think, 3,000 beds prepared at the convention centre. Mm. All these testing kits that are online, are ventilators.
How many beds is at the convention centre?
3,000 beds.
3,000 beds, yo. That's quite, yeah. And is it currently is it in use at the moment?
As of 3 weeks ago, the uptake on beds was around 10%. I speak under correction, mm-hmm. But it's going to be taken up exponentially as the peak, as we get to the real meat of the peak, as it were. So, mm-hmm. So from that point of view, whilst our economy is slowly getting kick-started again, we must also understand that safety remains a huge concern, and the listeners particularly must understand that even though the regulations are being relaxed periodically and slowly, the virus and the risk remains, and it's up to each one to take care of their health and safety.
What concerns me mostly probably is the fact that we are a very sociable community. Cape Town people, they love their sociability, they love being together, they love eating, they love laughing, and all that type of things. So now, you have a situation where these sit-down restaurants have been opened again. Of course, they have the protocols in place where people must have a mask on when they get there. There's sanitization happening, there's 1.5 meters apart. And of course they're not having self-service buffets, which is what our people really like, you know, they eat as much as you can type of situation. Mm-hmm. But now, isn't this going to be a serious breeding ground for potential viruses?
Simply being on the promenade on the Atlantic seaboard is a breeding ground for the virus. Mm-hmm. Or even the schools, for that matter, or churches, or the cinemas, exercising, auctions. All these industries, all these sectors are breeding grounds for the virus, and that we must accept. Mm-hmm. The issue remains that every person must take care of his personal safety, wearing masks, keeping physical distancing of 1.5 meters, and washing your hands regularly, and sanitizing regularly. I think that's all we can do at this stage, mm-hmm. and understand that the risk is there, and just live your life accordingly.
Okay, I understand that we're going to take that a little bit further when we come back. We're just going to go for a quick ad break. Please stay on the line.
The Legal Hour with Ihsaan Higgins.
And we are back with the Legal Hour with Randall Titus and Nazir Parker, going through this quagmire of laws and regulations pertaining to COVID and lockdown. So, where were we? The last one, what was the last question, Nazir?
Sean, we were speaking about the fact that we are going to be a bit more relaxed now, opening restaurants, opening casinos.
Yes.
And the capacity for breeding the virus, the spread of the virus.
I just want to get to some of the legal issues pertaining to people that are conducting restaurant businesses. Now, the restaurant business is definitely not running at capacity. You know, so in other words, when people embarked on this venture to open a restaurant, they of course had a business plan, and of course with that business plan there was numbers, that's feet of seats on the, you know, people coming into the restaurant, spend on that particular activity, etc. Now you have a situation where government says, okay, you guys can operate again, but on limited capacity. Surely this is going to have a massive impact on their ability to pay their rentals. Because now, if your potential was 100,000 rand a month, and now suddenly, at the maximum, you can only make 50,000 rand. Your but your expenses is still the same when it comes to rental, when it comes to staffing, etc. What now? What is the advice for people that own restaurants?
Yeah, Sean, I think from my perspective, I would try and enter into negotiations with the various creditors of my business, such as my landlord, such as my staff. Obviously, in the event that we have some assistance from government, that they are, as per the initial announcements, trying to assist small businesses and any business for that matter that's suffering during lockdown, one would have to factor that in. But in terms of going back, especially in the restaurant and the hospitality trade, one can't see that numbers going back to its pre-lockdown state, at least I wouldn't say for the next 6 months or more. Mm-hmm. So if one looks at that, if you can start being proactive with negotiating with creditors, such as the people I've mentioned earlier on, perhaps there's scope there for some agreement to relax some of the obligations, the financial obligations.
Mm.
However, one is seeing more and more. I mean, I recently was in Simonstown Court last week and took a drive through the Fishhook Main Road, and you see all these businesses that used to be there all closed, all the buildings are to let. So you start seeing the domino effect of the lockdown. Mm. And unfortunately, you know, when you can't meet your demands, you are faced with either one of two options. Either you voluntarily say, you know what, I'm going to have to close up shop and look for something else, or you're going to possibly be facing a lot of legal proceedings against you from your creditors. You can even end up in a liquidation application.
Randall, seeing that you deal in that type of business, your comment on that, especially where people can't afford their current business premises or business per se.
No, you're just quite correct. The lockdown has had a devastating effect on restaurants. We read in the media, the Restaurant Association of South Africa, and they say they expect 20 to 30% of restaurants never to open their doors again. And that's just the hard reality of the lockdown. And even now with restaurants being open, but not being allowed to sell alcohol, you know, where most of the profit seems to lie, it's going to have a similar effect. So, one way of, I suppose, to deal with the overhead issues around those kind of businesses, as you indicated before, and as Nazim says, is to negotiate with entities like your landlord. Mm-hmm. Landlords are in the same position, and ultimately, if I can give a suggestion to our listeners, is to engage your various creditors and everyone understands we're all in the same boat and try and find a solution where both parties come out the other side.
Yeah, because landlords must also realize that an empty premises is actually not going to benefit him at all.
Correct.
Mm.
Correct.
And, okay, so I just want to jump to something else quickly. Randall, I know that you have followed up quite extensively on this taxi issue.
Yes.
What is the issue right now with taxis? I mean, have you seen it on the news?
It's some frustration. The taxi is very much like the restaurants. You know, there's a certain threshold that they require to turn a profit. Their argument to the Minister of Transport is that carrying 70% capacity is not enough. They can't turn a profit. They owe money to the banks on their taxis. And to make money, they need to run 100% capacity. Government has dug in the heels and said, certainly the minister rather, the 70% rules is currently still in force. He's called on the taxi associations, Santaco in particular, the South African National Taxi Association in particular, to not call on the members to take the law into their own hands. He's indicated this morning in a press conference that his door is open, his communication lines are open, and that he's called on the taxi association not to take the law into their own hands. Otherwise, they might be forced, government might be forced, rather, to impose the law.
Okay, so when you say taking the law into to their own hands, has this been an actual threat by the taxi associations?
And carried out this morning. So what they've said is we'll take to the streets. We'll make the streets ungovernable. The threat was that if taxis are impounded because they break the law, they will then occupy the streets and make the streets uncomfortable.
But now, what's the current demand? What is the demand at the moment, and what's on the table by government?
The demand is, their argument is that, you've allowed the air travel, domestic air travel to continue.
Mm-hmm.
We require interprovincial travel for the taxis. We require us to run full capacity on our taxis.
Okay, so currently only intra-provincial travel is allowed, and not in, and not between provinces.
Correct. Okay. Quite so.
So they want to actually move, like for instance, a taxi want to say, "Listen, I want to drive to the Eastern Cape because that's where my client base is,
and that's where the profit lies in the long distance travel."
Okay.
And running full capacity.
But now, but there was another thing. I mean, there was a 20,000 rand dispute as well. I'm talking about more than a week ago. It was about
what governments say is they understand that the taxi industry is the backbone of the transport industry in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And government offered an ex gratia payment to sustain or help sustain or lessen the pain on taxi owners. Then there was a counter argument that or misconception that the ex gratia payment was actually part of a fund or a continuous payment from government.
Mm-hmm.
And government's position has been as a once-off ex gratia payment. There's a larger plan at stake for the taxi industry as a whole. And the transport minister was at pains to point out that ultimately what government wants to see is a formalized taxi industry, which will then invite subsidization by government.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a formalized industry, and you get subsidized by government. And that is in the planning stages.
Okay, so that is it to do with the taxi industry. Now, Nazir, just jumping back to you quickly. With regard to the courts, I believe there's lots of problems at the moment. Every time you hear there's a court closed or the deeds office is closed, and I mean, what's the current status of courts?
It's exactly that. It's the most unprecedented thing I've ever come across in my time as a practitioner, and unfortunately, it's extremely difficult to maintain touch with everything. In fact, some of the practitioners have created a chat on WhatsApp to try and keep track with all these changes of closures and the like. So it's difficult for practitioners to at the moment try and carry out mandates, especially with regard to demands of clients and timeframes and urgency, where civil matters are open. And in fact, last week we had a matter in Cape Town Magistrates Court, and we got their courts were closed. They picked up a positive COVID case. We were forced to stand outside the building, and the magistrate actually came out to try and assist the people in the streets and try to postpone the matters right there outside in the streets. So that's the difficulty that we've got nowadays with practitioners. I think from a criminal perspective, they are trying to keep it as usual, as normal as possible under the circumstances.
This is now the criminal matters.
The criminal matters, yes. The civil cases, though, are not being as fortunate. So even in the High Court last week, registrars were forced to come out into the streets and help the people. So that's the reality that we're facing at the moment. It's unprecedented.
Yeah, but now the problem is, I mean, especially with regard to, I mean, so Petty Faisal was not on air tonight, but with regard to the deeds office, I believe that was also closed.
I think they're trying to. There was a notice that came out earlier to say that the deeds office will be opening again tomorrow. It closed as of last week and Friday, but as I understand the stats, I think there's about 14,000 backlog deeds at the moment.
Oh my goodness. Okay, but now, of course, that has a heavy ripple effect on everybody. So nobody gets paid. Lawyers don't get paid. Estate agents don't get paid. Sellers can't get their money. Buyers can't move into their property. I mean, it just has a massive, massive ripple effect on the economy.
But I think, just to use that term that you used when we started, quagmire, this is a real legal quagmire.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that for the listeners' benefit, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay.
What this lockdown has done, this crisis, has forced the courts into the 21st century. You'll find now that the courts are more understanding of online the online way of doing business, using platforms such as Teams, the US to conduct legal matters.
Randall, do you find it useful? Because I mean, I find it extremely tedious to be on the other side of a computer. I mean, when you're representing someone,
it is, because we are still in the infancy of this particular platform. I've done quite a few matches over the last few weeks using, for example, the Team Viewer, and as people get the hang of and get comfortable with the medium, it will get easier as we go along. And I think that is the way forward and probably the future of litigation.
Well, that's one positive, but as I say, it still doesn't help the general public, you know, if they don't have access to basic services by government, yeah, especially within justice.
You're right. Now, you're quite right. In the short term, it's going to be a challenge. So there's no getting away from that unfortunate reality.
And then, Nazir, also the question of the litigation documents. I mean, what's happening to that? Are the courts accepting documents at the moment?
It's an extremely new thing that we're involved in now. The practitioners amongst themselves are, by virtue and operation of the rules of court, accepting service of pleadings via email. Mm-hmm. However, the filing of that document at court, I mean, certain courts are saying you are allowed to email it. Certain courts are saying, no, we still require the hard copies to be delivered. And the High Court has got a set up there by the security guards to, with a whole lot of boxes there, where you simply just drop the pleadings in the box and hope to God it finds its way into the file.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have the luxury of having stamped documents to take back home again as proof. So
okay.
I hope at some point in time, the Western Cape will probably become more efficient in terms of the operations of the court systems, because Pretoria and Gauteng is using this beautiful thing called case lines that they are using as a database for all documents that must be filed and issued and things like that.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. Let's agree that we have what we call this legal quagmire, and that we must navigate through this quagmire. And of course, we have people like yourselves that we can ask questions, and of course, it gets answered. And at least there's a little bit of understanding by the public as to what is currently happening, especially those people that don't have access to people that can explain to them at home what is happening out there. So, shukran very much. Thank you very much, Randall, for coming on. It's already late, so thank you very much, and we hope to see you soon again.
Thank you, Khan.
Thanks, and Nazir, shukran very much to you as well. And we say to you, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Okay, so from my side, I see Buta Yusuf has come in, and he's looking as dashing as ever with his mask on. So he's going to be joining the listeners very, very soon. I just want to say to those people that sent me messages, I explained my domheid earlier on with regard to my own computer and the keyboard of the studio. So those people are welcome to contact the Legal Cafe and with their questions on 082-3363-778, the number 082-3363-778. They're very welcome to send their questions. If I can answer it, or if one of the lawyers can answer it via WhatsApp, they will do that. If not, and it's more complicated, then we're going to ask you, you can pay the Legal Cafe a visit. So the number 082-3363-778. So from my side, shukran to everybody, the listeners, for allowing us to serve this public. And we say, until we see you next week, inshallah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Legal Hour with Ihsan Higgins. The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.